This is Push Button Influence, where the world's leading influencers candidly share their exact strategies for maximizing reach, accelerating growth, and generating massive exposure, all by leveraging the power of new media. You can become the next Larry King, Oprah, or Howard Stern. All you need to do is broadcast your brilliance. Push Button Influence teaches you how. Here are your hosts, Alex Mondoshian and Steve Olscher.
All right, all right, all right. Nice. Nice. All right. Well, welcome to Push Button Influence. Really, really, really appreciative that you're here and you're joining me, Steve Olscher, along with the one and only Alex Mondoshian, and of course, the one and also only Neil Patel. So, Neil, thanks so much for joining us today. And Alex, you've got a word for the day, do you not?
I do. For those of you joining us for the first time, and Neil, you are one of them. Our paths have never crossed on the same live cast or in the same room. So welcome. It's a pleasure to meet you. I know more about you than you know about me. We always start with a word, and the word for me is measure. Now, I didn't put measurement, which is a noun. I put the verb measure because Steve, like another gentleman I've interviewed in the past, Seth Godin, they kind of look alike, at least from the ears up. What's super, super important is you can't improve what you don't measure. And one of my mentors, Tom Peters, said that over the years. He's written best-selling books. And Steve, it just seems to me when Steve introduced me to Neil, and I've looked him up online, that measurement is a big thing for him, as well as not giving up, as well as thinking big, as well as never getting left behind, as well as risking. You know, I've seen his quotes and everything else. So we have a lot of questions for him along those lines, inner game and outer game. Steve, what is your word for the day?
Yeah, welcome, Neil. My word for the day is mining. Mining is my word for the day. And I mean, I think, Neil, you could definitely speak to this, and I'm absolutely going to want you to speak to this, as I know Alex and everyone who's watching will as well. Mining is all about getting to the good stuff, whether it's gold or oil or whatever it might be, right? And you are absolutely one of the best in the world of helping your clients and creating systems that help people mine down the, you know, whatever you want to call it, down the rabbit hole or whatever it is to get to the good stuff. And unless you're willing to mine and keep going and commit to getting to the good stuff, you know, you might never, ever find it. And I know that your systems and your projects and your software and the things that you do make it so much easier for people to mine to the gold. And so I know we're going to be talking a lot about that. But Alex, that's my word for the day.
Okay, Neil, first question, measuring and mining. So tell us, what specific incident inspired you to get in the business you're in? I mean, you have a lot of technical know-how. You know SEO, but you're good at one thing that most people in those realms are not good at, and that's marketing. I love your popovers. I love your web pages. I mean, they look freaking sexy. And I go, where did this guy come from? How come I don't know him? So what's the incident that got you inspired to get started in this business of online marketing?
Yeah, you know what the funny thing was? I was 16 years old. I was looking for a job on the internet. I couldn't find one. I landed on a site called monster.com, and I found out they had a stock symbol. All the jobs I was searching for required a college degree. At the age of 16, I didn't even have a high school degree. So I saw their stock symbol. I clicked on it. I'm like, oh, what's this? Market cap? Wow, they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars? It's like, oh, cool. If I copy this site identically, and I make 1% of what they make, I'll be rich. So that's what I ended up doing. I popped up a site. I paid people to help me out. I found a lot of developers like on web hosting talk and places like that. They were slow, didn't get great results. Nonetheless, the site eventually got up, went up, and I was like, all right, where's the revenue? Where's the people? Keep in mind, Google Analytics wasn't even out at this time. I was using like stat counter type of software, their site meter that your hosting provider was giving you. I was looking at all this, and I was like, no one's coming to the site. I thought you pop up a website and boom, people are like there to your site instantly. That wasn't the case. So I eventually had to learn how to market my own site. I paid a few marketing firms. They gave me no results. They took my money. I learned it on my own. I started ranking all over Google for keywords like tech jobs and jobs and Job Finder and hunt for jobs. I still didn't make any money once I got the traffic because I didn't know how to convert the visitors into customers. But I got one part of the puzzle down. I figured out how to get visitors to my own website. And that's how I started my marketing journey. I realized that, hey, I don't know how to monetize, but I can figure out how to drive traffic to websites. And I've always been good with that due to the fact that I'm analytical and I'm really creative.
So in other words, Get exposure first and then worry about monetizing later. Was that the approach?
That's correct. Cool. Well, technically, I wish I could monetize first. I just didn't know how. Being fully honest.
That's like, you're not dating them first. It's like a one night stand and it's exciting, but it doesn't last forever. So, that's the approach we're taking too. Get exposure, get traffic. Facebook did the same thing. Google did the same thing. And then monetize later on. And every infographic I've read of yours is all about not giving up, thinking big, keep going, blah, blah, blah. Steve?
Yeah. And first and foremost, I mean, we got to get it out here, man, because we used obviously a picture that's a little older. When did you go full Chrome Dome, man? When did that happen?
Oh, it's been over a year. I used to take Rogaine, Propecia, and medicine, like different kinds. And then my doctor's like, Propecia had some bad side effects. And I'm like, well, I don't experience them. At the time, I was probably 28 years old. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm good to go.
Oh man!
We should get you off of it because there's something about like cancer and the medication. The medicine was supposed to fight cancer. That was the purpose of it. The side effect was it grows hair, and I was taking it just for the hair growth part. And he's like, "Oh, we need to get you off this." And once I stopped taking, all my hair started falling out. It took a year, so I was like, "Ah, screw it." You know what? I'm going bald. I even tried a fake hair. So my hairdresser was cutting my hair. She's like, oh, you should do what Ben Affleck does. I'm like, what the hell does Ben Affleck do? She's like, he has fake hair. You didn't know it? And she's like, yeah, I know the person that does it. It looks real. You can't even tell. They'll blend it into your real hair. So I went there. He did it. I spent like $3,000-$4,000. And she's like, yeah, this is how much it's going to cost every month. And I was like, that's a lot of money. But I was willing to do it for hair. I then ended up the next day going to a jumpy house. You know where you go trampoline and you jump up and down? And my damn hair started like sweating because they put like a contact lens on your head. Oh, so you can't breathe and you can't itch it. And I'm like, screw this shit. I went home, I tore it off. And I'm like, I don't care if I have hair. And I just went bald at that point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, as an entrepreneur, I mean, we all kind of get into business because we think it's going to be, easier, right? I mean, we can just have that laptop lifestyle. And we plug in the computer and then, just money starts flowing in. We work from maybe 9 to 11, take a 3-hour lunch and, and then just call it a day or whatever it might be. But we kind of trade that 9 to 5 for that 9 to 11, and that's PM. So at least it makes it a lot easier for you to, on those short nights of sleep, you just kind of get up, you're rubbing, you go, okay, it's good to go.
Also, really convenient. I would not go back if I could even grow hair. Because now there's like surgeries. I don't know what it's called, but like they do little pokings. They don't even have to do cut your head out or scalp or whatever. And I can get hair again. I'm like, I like being bald. It's convenient.
All right, Alex, I'll let you ask a real question.
Okay. Well, I'm into bald. I mean, I still have my hair thanks to my mom. My dad's, pretty much a comb over Donald Trump and really thinning out. But, it's a brand. I mean, Seth Godin used it as a brand many, many years ago. And, you stand out. The real question is when you start a relationship with someone coming to one of your two sites. I mean, we have Crazy Egg and Kissmetrics. But when someone comes in and you indoctrinate them into your email autoresponder, what kind of message do you want to start building that relationship? What are you saying to them to build that so that people can, experience it before they actually go and opt in?
So you're saying what makes me create an autoresponder that makes people want to opt in, or what goes into it?
No, what's your message? What's your outcome that you want once they opt in for that ongoing relationship with them? How do you indoctrinate them into that new relationship?
Oh, I just keep educating them. I'm a big believer. If someone's going to give me their email address, I need to give before I ask for anything. It doesn't matter who they are. I don't care if they're rich, poor, have a business owner or don't. They just need help. Don't care if they're from the US, India, Brazil. It doesn't matter where they are from. I just want to help people because if I help them and I can help them succeed, I'm going to create more loyal fans who are going to tell the world about me. And eventually some of them will end up buying. I prefer the method of trying to help most of the small guys all for free and then make my money off the large corporations. I know that sounds weird, but the Googles and the Amazons of the world have way more money, and I don't like taking money from the small mom and pops. Sure, sometimes I do charge them for stuff because it takes a lot of time or effort, but I do try to give a lot of, to them away for free. And the big corporations, they don't mind paying. They just want the extra hand-holding, and they'll gladly write a big check for it. So that's my key strategy is I believe small is the new big, in which all these people, the small guy, they have a voice, especially due to social media. If you can help them out, you'll create all these raving fans, and eventually the big guys, which are the large corporations, have no choice but to listen and spend money with you.
Yeah, let me do a commentary on that. Everyone who's watching this blab, as a marketer, I've never heard that type of strategy articulated just the way Neil did, but think about it. If Neil is demonstrating to his primary market, which looks secondary in the autoresponder sequence, you know, the corporations, the folks, the big guys, the big boys and gals, right? If he's demonstrating to them when they're coming in and checking out what he's got, that he does know how to serve the little guy and gal, that's exactly who the big boys are going after anyway. So he's already demonstrating that's what he's good at, and it's easier for them to write the big check saying yes versus withholding and not doing that, and then you have to prove it through a presentation instead of an autoresponder sequence or what's already on the site. So it's a brilliant strategy. Most people don't articulate it that way. Steve?
Yep. So, Neil, I have to ask the question. So which came first, the kiss or the egg, right? I mean, that's like the that's the question, right? But I think I know. But for those who don't know, kind of take them back through the kiss metrics, the crazy egg, the quick sprout, I mean, all the fun stuff that you've got going on. And as you look at the three, and I know you've done other things as well, but as you look at those three, which is your favorite and why?
Yeah, so with the crazy egg, kiss metrics, quick sprout, the way it started off was crazy egg came out. As crazy egg was coming out, we couldn't figure out how to track our lifetime value of our customer. People would pay a monthly fee, some would churn, some would stay years, some would stay a few months, and we didn't know how to track it. That's why we created Kissmetrics for it. So Kissmetrics wasn't named Kissmetrics at its time. It was an internal tool to help us solve our own problems. QuickSprout, at the same time I released Crazy Egg, it was my own personal blog where I went out there and just gave free marketing advice. I wasn't looking for anything. I just wanted to help people out. And the reason I didn't call it neilpatel.com was I didn't have that domain name. So I called it QuickSprout because I'm frugal. My business partner had the domain in his GoDaddy, so I just use it because I was like, oh, this is a free domain. Score, I saved $7 or $6. And that's how I thought about it. And then Kissmetrics came, and then, you know, we had issues with the, like, lawsuits and stuff. Business was growing fine, still doing all right. Their CEO took it over. My co-founder and I focus on QuickSprout these days. There's still Crazy Egg that we work on, but QuickSprout, Crazy Egg, that's our main focus. And then I also blog for fun, right? It's not really looking to make money out of it. Just enjoy helping others.
Yeah. And so for those who are unfamiliar with what those tools are, so what exactly do they do and how do they help make the lives of folks who are trying to do business on the net easier?
Yeah. So Crazy Egg has two products. One's called Crazy Egg. One's called Hello Bar. Hello Bar is simple. It helps you convert visitors into customers, from collecting emails to getting them to go to a landing page, from pop-ups to modals to sliders. It just helps you send people to the areas you want on your site so you can make more money. And best of all, it's free. It doesn't cost money. You can pay for premium plans, but you pretty much get almost everything for free. As for Crazy Egg, think of it this way. You have analytics on your site or you have traffic come to your site. Do you know where they're clicking, where they're not, what's causing someone to buy, what's causing them not to? Google Analytics is great, but it doesn't visualize the data. Not everyone's a number person like I am. So we decided to show it in a visual fashion to help people understand what they need to change. For example, if everyone's clicking an image that's not clickable, you better fix it or make that image clickable.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
I can't hear you, Alex.
Yeah.
I was typing. That's why I was muted.
Steve. Yeah, I was going to say. We were having a private conversation, evidently.
Okay, so if you couldn't read my lips. In other words, you're talking about eye gravity. It's like where on the page are the eyes going, right?
That's eyes, mouse movement, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. Define optimization for me. I mean, you're big on conversion, but what is optimizing a website really mean, because people don't typically appreciate how little changes can make a huge difference. Lots of little changes.
Yeah. For example, with Hello Bar, the reason we ended up acquiring and giving it away for free, as a blogger and a website owner, I realized that exit pop-ups are a quick way to boost my revenue by 10%. That's at least what we were finding in the internal data we were seeing. When you fine tune them, 10%, 15, 16 on the high end, on the low end, like 4 or 5% if you do them off or terribly. So we're just like, wait, why isn't someone just helping all these website owners do it? See, website owners say, hey, my site's messed up. Let me go find a designer, a UI guy to fix stuff. But why should people have to pay for that? Why can't they just make quick fixes or use some quick tools, make more money, and if they succeed, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just for those who are getting a sense of the family thing going on, how old is the little one?
Yeah. Can you hear the little kids in the background?
Uh-huh. How old?
So I'm at my sister's house. My sister's married to my business partner. The little one is one. And then the older one is 5 years old. But they're entertaining, like the one-year-old. It's her way or the highway. Like if I don't listen to her, like, oh, it's no good. And even when we eat, she makes me like put it on her lap and she's like, no, I'm going to eat your food before you get to eat it. And she makes a mess of it. When she's done, she's like, here you go. You can eat the rest.
Oh, it's funny.
The five-year-old is probably emotionally more mature than the both of us combined, Steve and me. So that sounds good.
Yeah, no doubt. Talk a little bit about the freemium model, because it's kind of ebbed and flowed over the years. And you've been online long enough to hear when folks kind of got into the game and they were like, absolutely, that's what you should do. And then it kind of flowed back to no, don't get involved in the freemium model. And now folks are kind of coming back to. So I'm just kind of curious what your take is as someone who is obviously in the freemium space. What is your take on it? And what would you do insofar as, 'cause I know you get involved with startups and whatnot. Do you advise people to follow that model at this juncture?
I do. Why can't a lot of stuff be for free? People don't like buying something, not being happy, and then having to return it or losing the money. I believe that things, if possible, should be free, and there's premium stuff you can charge people for. That way you build some brand loyalty, people get to test out stuff. You make less money as a business owner, but hey, that's okay, because at least you're winning customers, and in the long run, I think you'll be larger for that.
Yeah, and as a follow-up question to that, if I might, Alex, at what point do you kind of draw the line in the freemium model? Because it seems to keep moving. And again, that's another sort of ebb and flow in terms of where that line is between free and then whatever that premium offering is. It's going to vary, of course, from industry to industry and product to product. But as a general rule of thumb, or maybe you can give an example of someone that you've recently advised, a company you've recently advised, in terms of where you suggested that they draw the line between the freemium and premium.
Yeah, for me, the freemium and premium, the way I end up seeing it is an ideal world, you should just give it all away for free, and that's what we're moving towards, and just charging for enterprise features. Like, hey, why can't you get all the features for free? And if you're a big company and you want our help, we'll charge you an arm and a leg every month, and you can pay for it. And you know what? They'll get a much higher ROI for it. But all the small, medium businesses, you can have it free, no strings attached. Even the big guys, you can have it free. But if you want someone like on my team to modify the marketing material because I know it converts better, or adjust it to fine tune it so that way you make even more money, well, you should pay a lot for it, because I believe my time is valuable. And if my time helps you make millions of extra dollars per day, then by all means, you'll be happy paying it as well. But that's how I see freemium or premium, is which eventually it'll all move towards, because it's getting so competitive. Everything's for free. And then the big guys just pay a premium amount for customized help, like from individuals, or it'll turn into a marketplace where everything's free. And if you want help, you can find people who are highly rated and they'll help you implement the software or get the most out of it. And it's a win-win. You can take a cut of each transaction.
Nice. Alex?
Okay. I love your infographics. I love the pictures and the quotes that you put up there. And you keep talking a lot about risk and the importance of risk, and many entrepreneurs are risk averse. Tell us, you know, how have you risked since you've been online? What are some of the big risks you've taken, and what's worked, what hasn't worked?
No pain, no gain. The bigger the risk, the bigger the reward. The smaller the risk, the smaller the reward in general. Well, I've risked a lot of stuff. I've risked everything from my home to every single life savings I have, to my parents' money, to borrowed money. But I'm a big believer, if you believe in it and you think it's going to work and the metrics show it, then go all in. And I'll be honest, at this point, I don't risk as much now because I don't want to lose what I have, but I do, still am pretty risky.
Well, here's the paradox, Steve, if I may, one more, is we always have two-part questions. When you're least courageous in the beginning as an entrepreneur, when I say you, I just mean us collectively, it's always risking in the beginning because you have the most to lose. And yet, you know, that's when you have to risk the most and have to be the most bold.
You have the least to lose.
Because you haven't accumulated the reputation and the branding and everything else. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, at the beginning, you have the least to lose, especially if you're young. Mark Cuban always says it too, in which if you're a young entrepreneur, just go all in. If you live with your mom and dad and they pay for food and they provide a roof over your head, what do you have to lose? Even when you have more to lose when you're older and you have a family. So as you're younger, the risk is, even if it's high, what you're going to lose isn't much at all, because you can start over, you can do whatever it takes. When you're older, it's not even the wealth. When you're older, it's just harder.
All right, Gabriel Mondosian, you're 15 years old. I hope you're listening to Neil, because he's absolutely right. Gabe's my son. Go.
Yep. And for those who are new to Blab, welcome and thanks for joining us live here. If you're listening on the podcast, make sure you join us live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as we bring the world's leading influencers to Push Button Influence here. So if you join us live on Blab and you have a question for Neil, the way to post your question is to use the /, and then the capital Q. Those will go into the queue and we will get to those in just a little bit. So make sure you don't post them in the chat row. Please post them in the question area, which is using a /, capital Q, and then we will get to those questions soon enough. Now, Neil, I know you're all about, you're about a lot of things, but when you are in the angel space right now as an investor, what are the three key things that you look for before you make an investment?
Growth. Like good growth with numbers, revenue, as long as revenue is continually climbing. And three is like small churn. Not everyone has churn as a metric because different companies don't have reoccurring or whatever it may be. But it could be like repeat customers or them continually raving and recommending your product to other people. It's all about those three metrics in my eyes. And of course, it varies per industry.
Mm-hmm. And as a follow-up then, you didn't mention anything about the product itself. Is that sort of last on the list for you? It's more of people first and commitment first before even the product?
The product's a given. If I don't like the product or the company, I don't even touch it or look at it.
Yeah.
But just and so, the product doesn't mean you're going to do well. So I'm a big believer in trying to figure out how to get good growth metrics and revenue and low churn. And of course, I always had to believe in the product.
Yeah.
All right, Neil, I'm going to ask you who you looked up to as you were first getting started, kind of to model and then follow up with your own stuff. But everyone else watching, if this is your first Blab or if it's your ongoing Blab, there are two buttons on the left-hand side, which makes Blab very, very unique because they are attached to Twitter and now Facebook. When you click on that lighter blue button, it says tweet and there's a little bird there. You are telling a bird. It's going on your profile in your Twitter stream. Same with a Facebook post. So unlike other live streaming platforms, Blab allows you to get it out there. They also have a network that's watching right now. Sometimes 10 to even 20 times as many people inside the Blab are outside watching. And so it is very, very unique, and that's why we've used it as our broadcasting live stream platform, because that fourth box you see that says open seat, we use that in a very, very creative way. We use that for the questions during the live Q&A section, which will be coming up in about 10 minutes. So if you have a question, type in /, big Q, and then your question, it'll show up on the left-hand side where it says questions, just like Water Citizen just said. And then Steve will put it in that window that is right now. I see it underneath me and to the side of Neil. So Neil, who'd you look up to? Who are your like mentors or marketing idols that you kind of lived into?
Yeah, sure. So I learned a lot about marketing from a guy named Patrick Gavin. He's on TechSync Ads. He also had Position One, I believe, which was his marketing website. I also learned a lot about SEO from a guy named Aaron Shear. He's worked at SEO Inc. I also learned a lot about marketing from just reading online from search engine Watch at the time and ClickZ and sites like that, and going to the conferences such as Search Engine Strategies. Jeremy Shoemaker is another guy I learned quite a bit from. But it's just from a bit of from everywhere. And even now today, even though people look at me as a marketing idol or they say, hey, Neil, you're good at marketing, I still think I don't know that much and I could be learning more. So I continually read, try to understand what the young kids are doing, because these days they're running circles around me, just trying to keep up, be creative, and just trying to grow as an individual, right?
Yep. And do you, you know, this show is called Push Button Influence, and it's all really geared towards helping aspiring influencers become influencers in their own right by learning from people who already are. Do you consider yourself to be an influencer?
Not really. I'm just an average Joe.
Yeah. And it's interesting, right? I mean, we hear that, and it's right. You're just doing your thing. And the fact that you can push a button and hit to 150,000 people, it's still you just doing your thing, which is why I think in large regard, influencers continue to grow because in fact, they are just doing their thing and they don't consider themselves to be this, you know, larger than life type of, you know, person. But what does it mean to you when you hear the term push button influence? How does that ring true for you? How does that resonate?
Yeah, to me, it means you push a button and you can influence people, right? If you have some following, whether it's 5 people or 1 million people, you still push a button and you're influencing someone.
Yep. Alex?
Yeah, the same response we get all the time. Do you consider yourself an influencer? Nah, I'm just the average guy, you know, and that's typically a telltale sign that you are an influencer, because it's like water to a goldfish. Let's talk about your daily schedule. Most people aren't productive. You know, they allow a lot of things to get in the way. So, Neil, I'm sure every day is different, but what do you want to get done at least, you know, as part of your workday? What is a non-negotiable? You have to get this done in order to feel.
I check all my emails. As long as I can check all the emails and get work done, I'm happy. If I can't do that, then I feel like I'm not being productive enough. I also go through my daily task list and get all the stuff in there done as well. If I can't, that means my tasks were too big or I was lazy and I don't like being lazy. I don't care if it's a Sunday, I'm working. Saturday, doesn't matter. I'm still single. I'm not married. So I have the privilege to work as much as I can, unless I'm around my mom and dad and then they tell me off.
let's go sort of in a different direction here, because you're in a fortunate position, or at least a lot of people would think you're in a fortunate position because you're on the pulse of what's new, what's now, what's next. As you look at the next year and maybe even the year beyond, because it's really hard to go too much farther out than that, what are some of the things that, number one, have you super excited? And number two, what do you think people should be thinking about in terms of technology or tools or resources that they need to bring into their repertoire?
Yeah, the thing I'm really excited about in the next few years is actually virtual reality. Like, you see those headsets like Oculus or whatever it may be, right? I'm trying to figure out how they're going to end up changing the marketing realm. Because you look through these glasses, it creates this whole new environment, kind of like Google Glasses. Google Glasses didn't do as well as people wanted, but I was like, oh, if that goes mainstream, it's a whole new channel which you can market to. I really do think technology, mobile, web, all this kind of stuff is really going to impact how we do our marketing. And what it's going to hold for us, I don't know. The part that's scary to me is like these 16-year-olds or 20-year-olds, right, the young people, they're going to probably be better at it than I am. I'm not even on Snapchat.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And so some of the tools that, I mean, there's obviously millions of them. One of my favorite is Unbounce. Are you familiar with those guys?
Yeah, Unbounce is a really good landing page creation tool. It works great. It's worth checking out.
Yeah, what else in sort of similar fashion to Unbounce would you recommend for others who may not be taking full advantage of some of the things that are easy to implement but can have a dramatic difference on their business?
Sure. Unbounce. Another one is Lead Pages or ClickFunnels. Infusionsoft is another good tool. Infusionsoft is pretty affordable. Another tool that you could end up leveraging out there is Google Analytics. A lot of people take it for granted. If you set up analytics right, you can figure out how to maximize your traffic. BuzzSumo is another one. It tells you what's hot or what's not in different spaces. Like you pop in a keyword and I'll tell you what URLs are popular and which ones aren't. Mm-hmm. So those are the tools that I use.
And it, just in case you guys missed that, because it was a little bit wonky when it came through, that's BuzzSumo is the one that you're referring to, correct, Neil?
That's correct. That is what I'm referring to.
Look at that one. There's the future right there.
Awesome.
Yeah, Alex?
Okay, I'm going to focus on predictions, Neil. You mentioned virtual reality, but what is the future 3 years from now look like for the internet? Now, that's usually about, you know, in dog years, that's 21 years from now in real life. But what does it look like? What's the landscape going to look like? Will we still have email? How will we be communicating and marketing to other people? Will there be exit pops? Are there going to be website? What's your sense of that?
I think the big thing isn't going to necessarily be if there's emails or any of that. It's going to be how things are filtered and the messaging.
No.
And which she calls me Nilu. She doesn't know how to say my name, but it's what my mom calls me as well. Nonetheless, there's going to be filtering in which there's Facebook, Google, etc. You're getting all these results. You're getting all these emails. You're getting push notifications. How can these devices figure out only what you want and only show you that? I think that's what's going to happen, in which there's going to be companies, or these big companies out there are going to figure out how to filter out the crap.
Yep.
And that's going to suck. So look at Gmail. There's now a promotions tab. If they see a specific pattern, your content's going in there, and that user is not going to see your emails unless they click on it, which probably they're not going to end up doing so.
Yep. And at this moment, where are you investing? I know you talked about a couple of things earlier that you've got going on, but where are you investing personally right now? In what industries, where are you investing some of those money? You got a fund, or how do you do that? Is it a fund, or is it just your own personal investments?
I just write a check from my bank account.
Yeah. So where are you writing checks to right now? What industries? What are you liking?
Anything that's hot and going up and to the right, and I think I can make money on. I'm pretty simple. It's like if something is a good product or service and it makes sense, then I invest in it. I remember there was this nail polish company named Julep. And when they first hit me up for money, I think it was like 50 or 100,000. I forgot what I wrote to them. They're just like, oh, we want to sell nail polish on a monthly basis. You pay $20 every month and you get nail polish. I'm like, who the heck is going to pay for nail polish every month? This is silly. $20? I'm like, you crazy? That's a lot of money. And my female assistant at the time was like, oh my God, this is amazing. How can I sign up for $20 a month nail polish? I'm like, what? And then I was like, how many subscribers do you have? He's like, oh, we've only been out for 30 days. We haven't done marketing, but we have 1,000 subscribers now. I'm like, wow, in 30 nice. Days, $20. I was like, oh, cool. Here's my check. I didn't get it. I still don't get it. They got way more than 1,000 subscribers now, but sometimes you just invest even if you don't get it, because the numbers go up and to the right. I'm not saying I'm going to make money from it. Something can happen to the company and they go bankrupt, but I just look at numbers. That's all I really understand, is just pure data.
Yeah. And what do you think of the continuity revenue model insofar as like monthly memberships, or what's your take on that as the basis for their revenue model? What's your take on continuity programs right now?
Yeah, my take on continuity programs are whatever, if it's valuable and people really need it, it'll do well. If it's not, they won't. For example, Dollar Shave Club, you got to keep shaving as a guy, or at least a lot of people do. Nail polish, yeah. I don't know. If women say they need to paint their nails every single month, no matter what, then hey, that's going to work. But the continuity programs will mainly work if there's a real need for it. A lot of people are just trying to come up with these continuity programs and charge money. And I'm like, it won't work. I was looking at one of my friend's sites today. I forgot what it's called. It teaches you like makeup video lessons and all this. And she's like, yeah, you can buy a daily membership, a monthly, or a yearly. And I'm like, okay, I can just go on YouTube and find all these videos for free.
Hey, Steve, something happened, but we just went up like 150 people watching this thing right now. So whatever the heck you guys have been doing, blabbing, thank you so much. Neil said something interesting. Now, King Gillette, who really invented the thing, and there was such a thing. There was such a person named King Gillette. You know, you buy the razor, you know, and you lose money on the razor, like a lost leader, the razor itself, and then the razor blades are where the continuity. But the new shave club concept is kind of changing, you know, so it's interesting the direction that things are going. So as far as optimization, we have a lot of marketers watching right now, and optimization is dirt cheap. If you know what to do, then you can increase pulling power super, super quick. I'm going to give a quick tip, and then that gives you time to think about a really cool optimization tip for you, and other than an exit pop, Neil. So think about that, and Steve, you too. Here's mine. So most people don't even think about their opt-out page. They think it's the end of the world because people are opting out from their list. But most people don't think about also that people who are opting out are taking action. So I monetize my opt-out page. There's a video at the top. I tell them, hey, please don't go. But if you do, there's three other options down below. And maybe if I wasn't good enough for you, those people will be because they're a lot smarter than me. And those happen to be three links that are friends of mine. It's really annoying. They were students. Now they're much bigger than I am. And if they click it, those are affiliate links. So I'm actually sending people my problem children, or I would deem problem child, and that ends up becoming a revenue generator, because if people are taking action, they may take action on buying someone else, especially if they're angry at me for whatever reason. So that's my optimization tip. It's not looked upon often, you know, optimizing and monetizing your opt-outs, but I have found it to be a very, very good revenue stream to the tune of about $20,000 to $22,000 a year. And I'll, you know, I'll take that as pure profit from people leaving me. So Neil, how about for you? What's an optimization tip that you can share with us that people can take to the bank?
Yeah, the first one is I'm going to copy yours. So I'll try that out. but my tip for you guys is really simple. People opt into email lists, or you collect the emails, and then most people just follow up with them later on, in which they're saying, hey, you know, check out this post or whatever it may be. One quick optimization tip that I know that works is if you have a thank you video on your opt-in, like on the page after they opt in, and then you actually make them fill out a survey. As crazy as this may sound, even if you don't do much with the survey, people end up becoming much more engaged, and they're way more likely to open up your emails, from what I found, over by like 15-16%, which is a huge difference. And another quick tip for you guys is that most people don't do is translate your content in different languages. So by using plugins like it's hreflang. That's how you translate your content. There's translation programs like Transposh. They're not that good compared to manual translation. But if you do that, you'll get so much traffic. There's over 300 million people in the United States. It's competitive no matter what industry you get into. I just expanded to Brazil. The marketing in Brazil, there's 200 million people, so roughly 66% of the US. And there's not even 1/100th of the competition.
Right. That's such a good point, because I speak overseas. So we have a lot of people who speak Polish as their primary language here. German.de is a very, very popular extension. But you have so many people who speak Spanish. So just go after the big rocks, Spanish speaking and Portuguese. Just those two languages alone, there's not a lot of competition if you do the sort of marketing that we're talking about. And just by getting people to understand your message in their mother tongue, could have massive impact. When I started to have Spanish-speaking coaches, not even Portuguese, because Portuguese is Portugal and Brazil, but of course Spanish, which is kind of nice, unlike China, most people understand Spanish from all over the world, whether it's Mexico, Venezuela, or, you know, of course, Spain. And just by having Spanish-speaking coaches, massive, massive impact on the number of people who said yes. So listen to Neil's tip. That's big. And it doesn't take a lot in order to make that happen. Steve, what about you?
Yeah. You know, optimization obviously is it's something that's near and dear to my heart. We at liquor.com, we took our optimization of just simply on the email side of the equation from under 0.5% up to almost 6% conversion on people coming to the site, simply by making sure that we split test again and again and again, different offerings, different reasons, different rationale. And I think that people ride the horse way too long. And it's like, you know, you just got to, and I think Neil, speak to this a little bit, because do you think that people are afraid to change what they perceive as working in the fear that what they might do next would work, you know, not nearly as well, when in fact it may work in our case almost 600, 700, 800, 900% better? So talk a little bit about the fear, and because that's an optimization tip, just split test, but talk a little bit about the fear of change and how it holds most people back online from truly optimizing their results.
Yeah, that's a crazy stat, by the way. 3.6 million unique visitors from Looker.com.
Like, Steve just kind of says this shit like, you know, okay, Looker.com, but over 3.5 million uniques. Uniques.
That would be per month, by the way. Just nobody's counting. Yeah.
Well, that's what MO stands for, right?
Oh, but sorry. Yeah.
You think that's important to state, Steve? Okay, so thank you, Neil.
I'll buy that site from you. Here's $100. I know it's worth way more.
Done.
There you go. The problem with testing and the reason most people don't do it is because they're just lazy or they don't know how to do it. It has nothing to do with the fear. From all the surveying and the research we've done, people don't know where to get started, how to implement, what are the next steps, how to come up with the variations. They're worried about making mistakes. And that's why blogs are really effective out there, or tools that help them come up with suggestions or ideas. Just people are lost. There's so much information. What do you do next? Not everyone's as smart as you know, you or Looker.com or whoever, because like 3.6 million uniques is a lot. You did an excellent job. You know your stuff. Most people don't, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And Alex, we're coming up here on about a quarter till, and I know we're going to get to some questions, and we're going to do that in the green room itself. So I'll let you kind of wrap up here. One more question in this session, if you will, this session that's going to go on to the podcast. And then stick around, guys, because we are going to be answering questions. Use the /Q here live on Blab Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific. Today we've got Neil Patel, founder of Kissmetrics, Crazy Egg, and all sorts of other interesting things, man. And it's definitely been amazing having you on here. But Alex, I'll let you close out this round before we get to the questions.
My final group are the folks who really, really matter, and those are the people watching this Blab. And Steve, we can go into the green room right afterwards. My question is, do you have a weekly show? I mean, Neil was talking about give away free content. Well, why market and then give content to support your marketing products? Why not give away a free show weekly and then incubate your product inside of that show as a sponsor if you're the only one who's watching it? That's a great way to start. So what's preventing you from having a weekly show? That's what we're doing here on Blab. I have one on Hangouts every single week on Friday. Steve has one with Reinvention Radio. Having a weekly show, everyone watching this right now can do that. And you can start with Blab, or you can go with one of the other platforms that are out there. You know what they are. What's preventing you from doing that in 2016? Now, our friend John Lee Dumas, who was on the previous week, he said the magic number is 8. 90% of podcasters, live streamers, people who have weekly shows, they stop after 8 or 9. So why don't you be part of that 10%? Do double that. Do 18 shows this year and see what happens. If you can't do one every week or every day like John does, what about every month? And then you'll be part of that 10%. Steve, back to you.
Yeah. And Neil, if people want to get a hold of you and pay you a lot of money or visit some of the fun sites that you got going on, where's the best place for folks to start?
Well, money, don't hit me up. But anything else, you can go to neilpatel.com.
No, give you money. Give you money.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to do any consulting. But other than that, they can go to neilpatel.com/contact, and I'm gladly willing to help.
Awesome. All right. So here's what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to wrap up the podcast version of Push Button Influence today with Alex Mendoza and myself, Steve Olscher, and Neil Patel. Be sure to join us every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific so that you can participate in the live Q&A, which is what we are going to get to right after this. So Neil, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to drop into the green room now. Alex, really do appreciate you being here with me today on Push Button Influence as well, my co-host extraordinaire. And we will drop into the green room right after this beautiful exit music.
You just learned how to broadcast your brilliance.
Tune in live to blab.im, Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific.
As the world's leading influencers share their proven strategies for leveraging the power of new media. For more information about your hosts, Alex Mandoshian and Steve Ulscher, to claim your free surprise gift, and to access every episode of Push Button Influence, visit pushbuttoninfluence.com.